Ladies and gentlemen, what's happening now? Welcome to April's edition of Derry Nostalgic. And before we go any further, two things. First of all, we're going to make reference to the Liam Coyle interview during this interview. If you want to catch up on that one, the only place to get it is on Drive 105's Match Night Live's YouTube channel, Derry Nostalgic with Liam Coyle. Excellent listen. And second of all our online content is brought to you by Paul Martin Menswear. Today we're going to have a look at the 1993-94 season and taking over from Roy Coyle amid financial crisis, director resignation and a rocky start. Tony O'Doherty became what his so-called friends described as the yellow pack boss, who would guide a depleted side to a top six finish, a League Cup victory and an FAI Cup final. In this interview you're going to hear tales from securing Peter Reid for a friendly against Crystal Palace and keeping Liam Coyle at the club. All with cameos featuring Luther Blissett, Neil McNabb and Glasgow Celtic legend Bobby Lennox. This episode is packed with character, crisis and classic Derry City resilience. So get yourself comfortable, relax and get ready to get Derry Nostalgic with Tony O'Doherty.
I was trying to manage Derry City and hold down a full-time job, which was extremely difficult. Also very challenging times in terms of budget and stuff like that. But the reality is, Dave, I was an accidental manager. I was a coach. I always believed I was good at coaching. I'm still good at coaching, right? I never wanted to be a manager. The circumstances were, as you know, a horrendous start to the league that season. Roy Coyle was a manager. He was a friend of mine. He was under intense pressure. I left him in the Everglades on the Sunday night, a really bad defeat, the crowd, you know, letting us know what they thought of us. At that stage, Roy had intimated to me that he was staying on, and I said, great stuff, we'll see it through together. And the following night, on Monday night, I was in the bowling alley with my late wife, Cora Mercer. I looked up and saw three directors, and I knew instantly. I took the job on the understanding that they would be on the lookout for somebody, but they weren't on the lookout for somebody because we did okay once I got under the seat. Plus, we just hadn't got the money, you know.
Were you ever told that you were going to be made permanent?
No, always left in such a way that I could leave, which actually happened in the end up because Paul Diamond then became chairman and after they went on liquidation, etc. Once he came and told me that he had Felix more or less signed up, that was perfect. I was away. In fairness to Paul, he would always have kept abreast of who they were talking to. You know, he talked to various people. I think they talked to Paul Doolan at that time and somebody else and a couple of guys across the water in England, but I always felt Felix was the right choice, and that turned out to be absolutely true.
You already mentioned about the threat of liquidation. Like, there is a lot going on at the club. For example, whenever you're assistant manager in May 1993, directors leave in block from their board positions because of debts that are totaling around £81,000 at the time. When you became manager, were you given a directive to try and steady the ship financially as well?
Not really, no. In fairness, they kept that away from me, in fairness, because when I took over, we were at the bottom of the table. My directive was basically to get us in a reasonable position. When I first realised that there was a problem was, and I'm fairly certain it was Galway that we drew, I think it was 0-0 in the Brandywell. And that meant we had qualified for the skin of our teeth for the top six. And I met our financial director and Phil Coulter, who was the president at the time, underneath the old stand. And basically, I was told that we would have been financially better off, given that they were heading towards liquidation, basically without saying it, if we had not qualified for the top six. So not a lovely thing for a manager to hear, but understandable from the financial point of view. You know, so that was the first inkling that I had that all was not well.
Before you did eventually make that top six, did you feel that you were under pressure before you had that conversation to make sure you made that?
Well, the reality is, 93-94, around about that time, I believe the crowds are now much more supportive in general. Back then, they weren't as supportive. Yes, as Derry City manager, yes, you're under pressure, particularly a local guy. Remember, I live here. I had to come back to my local bar, go to my work, go out walking among my local population. So, you know, a lot of pressure on anybody local taking the job, that's for sure.
In January 9th, you've already mentioned the match against Galway where you drew 0-0 and you got there by the skin of your teeth. It was mainly because of recently departed Neil McNabb's goal against Monaghan for St Pat's that guaranteed that status.
First of all, what a player. This little guy was clearly a little beer belly, we want to call it that, right? And at the same time, we also got, if you remember, Luther Blissett.
Yep.
Who the Derry fans very quickly named Luther Musset, with that particular Derry brand of humour. Luther looked like an athlete. Musculature was unreal. And here was this little guy, as I say, white as a sheet, bow-legged, couldn't really do the training, spoke to me about it. And I said, well, tailor training around your needs. And Neil basically played five a-sides all week. That's what he did. He didn't really train. But he was magnificent. What a player. What a player. Luther never wanted to be here, and he was let go after a few weeks. But McNabb was something else. Quality, quality player. And the guys all loved him. They were quite happy to carry the workload for him because they knew once he got the ball, he'd make things happen. Quality player.
Financial issues aside, there's a lot of documentation about players being approached whilst all this issue is going on, from England, from Ireland, from Scotland. Some illegal, some are formal. You're telling the board not to sell players or sell them at their peril because you don't want them balancing the books. And then yeah. You have people like Paul McLaughlin who you're threatening to leave because he was promised a part-time job by the board that never ever happens, and he feels he has to leave for financial reasons. Did you feel that you had enough support to deal with some of the problems that was going on inside the changing room?
I had a great relationship with the board. I understood that the board had a job that was maybe even more difficult than the one I had, right? Mm-hmm. When you start off, you're bottom of the league. You're not the fans' first choice, that's for sure. I wouldn't have been their second, third, or fourth choice at the time. All of that is in play, but again, I had a tremendous relationship with the players, tremendous relationship, you know. I told you about the job on a Monday night, and that's a true story. Basically, I was walking in on Tuesday night to the showgrounds, first time as the manager. Remember, I'd been very friendly with the guy, had a pint with him, whatever, you know. But I came in on the Tuesday night, and I could see it, they were all looking at me. Was I now going to be coach return gamekeeper? And this is, you can actually employ this. I said, right, guys, everybody go home, come back in taxis, now I'll meet you in the park bar. And that's a fact. Sat them all down the park bar, bought them a pint, and said, guys, I don't want this job, but I've been given it, and I'm going to do it. And we'll work together, whatever, all the old places, the doors open, all that. But if I have to manage, I'll manage. That's the after scene, and that was it, you know. I'd have been sacked on a Wednesday morning nowadays. It worked.
You've mentioned Liam Coyle there, and Liam has spoken to me on this series before, and he talked about when you were the first team coach or the assistant manager, and you came to his parents' house while he was at Oma Town about to sign for Corrine, but you put on the hard sell to bring him back to Derry City. Why did you feel it was important to bring Liam Coyle back to the brand?
Well, I want to take a wee bit of credit here, if that's possible, in the sense that I've always been, all my life I've studied nutrition, medicine. I've been up to date with sports medicine for 30 years, right? Mm-hmm. Way before anybody else was probably interested in that. And I checked out and found out the problem that Liam had, it was called degenerative, mm-hmm. which meant that that problem with his knee would happen over a long period of time. It wasn't like you're finished. It wasn't like an ACL, do you know what I mean? And I had been played out friendly for me. And then I went down to Buncrannon, watched them playing in Buncrannon in the Summer Cups. And I was utterly convinced and told everybody that Liam could play. I know the club doctor, Gordon Merson, was no longer with her. Brendan McLean was very angry at me. I studied the thing. It was a degenerative disease. Spoke to Liam. And when I heard he was going to sign for Corrine, yes, I went round. And I would have been very friendly with Liam's father as well, Faye. I played against Faye a few times. We persuaded Liam to come. If I did anything as a manager, that was probably my best move.
Funnily, he also says in the same interview that while he was unhappy at the club, you had actually spoke to him and had a big talk about changing his attitude and his approach. It was basically, this isn't Oma anymore, this isn't fun times, you need to knuckle down and turn things around.
Well,
do you remember that talk?
I do indeed, yes. Being approached regularly by Corrine, on several occasions he told me he wasn't going to play at the weekend, he was away at Corrine. I had long, long conversations with him, you know, not just because I wanted him as a magnificent footballer, but I was a friend of mine, a family friend, and I felt that as long as we had him on the team, people would play. He was an icon of sorts, even to the players. He was like a good look, totally, whatever you want to call it, extremely popular with the players, obviously. But yes, it came very, very, very close. I mean, there were several times I went home on a Thursday night and thought, he's not turning up on Sunday's away to Corrine. But as I say, I did speak to him on regular occasions, and I managed to keep him in the club, thanks for the heavens that I did.
That season, you also make two cup finals. Firstly, the League Cup, you defeat Shelburne over the two-legged final. What do you remember about those games?
Very tough games. And a place I never liked going to was Falcon. I'm sure the Derry players today will give you the same. The pitch is tight. crowds on top of you, you know. We literally spread the play at that time, you know, like they played about, and it was a really tough game. I remember that very, very, very well. Seemed like the longest 90 minutes of my life, you know. Eventually getting a trophy was magnificent, you know. More for the support, but we had tremendous support at that time, you know, when you think about it. We weren't exactly a great team, but when we played, we were good to watch. And we had went on a run and won quite a few games, you know. It's part of history. Your name's in the trophy. There you go. The big company. I think every Derry manager's won it, you know.
You were a bit self-deprecating there when you were talking about the League Cup. Would you see it as one of your biggest achievements?
Of course it would, because it was my first trophy with Derry City. At a time when Derry City were struggling both on and off the field, as you allude to get that, given where we had come from. I mean, after the Dundalk League game, when we were beaten, I can't remember, 4-1 or 4-2, whatever it was, it looked as if Derry City were basically going to be in a relegation scrap. A few games on there, we went in a run. And after that, there were very few teams that wanted to meet us. We weren't going to win the league. I'll tell you what, nobody wanted to meet us. As simple as that, you know, because we had managed between us to talk about in football. We had that bond. There's no question. Even to this day, you know, I meet Liam in the Brandywell and he'll tell you himself. And when he sees me, he'll say, "Where are you, Gaffer?" Funny, last night I was at a charity event and I was with Paul Carlisle. You know, he was the same. And I'm still a manager to him, if you know what I mean, you know. Yeah. Which is lovely after all these years, you know. Beautiful, it's a football thing, but it's lovely.
In the first leg, Craig McKeever opens a scoring with a superb finish. What can you tell us about the late Craig McKeever as a player and a person?
Every team and every club is made up of a series of guys who are different. And you need that. You need the jokers and the Craig. You need the Craig was a very natty dresser. Back in those days, most footballers weren't, you know. He came in one Sunday with a linen suit and a bag over the shoulder. I just looked at him in amazement. Great guy. Great team player, very, very fit. I don't think he ever got recognised for how decent a player he was. He wasn't maybe forward, didn't speak up a whole lot of team meetings. He's one of those players that all of us, myself included, as manager, and the rest of the team, you take for granted. And it's only when they're not on the team that you realise is that cog is missing from the wheel, so to speak.
The FAI Cup final sadly wasn't as successful, and I'm going to just read you what Artie Duffy had written about it. This is how the report started. Outnumbered on the terraces, outwitted on the flanks, Derry City's dreams of capping a remarkable season by winning the FAI Cup final was shattered by First Division champions Sligo Rovers on Sunday. Yet, for all their tenacity and determination, the victors must reflect on what was a fortunate win in the dismal and damp surroundings of Lansdowne Road. Is that how you remember it?
Yeah, well, I'm going to tell you a story that I found out some years later, right, that'll sum this up for you. Gavin Dykes was playing with Sligo.
Mm-hmm.
Gavin Dykes met me a couple of years later. He was rooming with one of the Scottish guys that they had over. And on the Saturday, both teams were in Dublin. Obviously, you go on the Lansdowne and you get a run round and all that, right? It was a very warm, humid day.
Mm-hmm.
Gavin Dykes said, went to bed that night, very warm, and they left the windows open, as we probably did in our hotel. And he said he woke up at 3 o'clock in the morning because he checked that alarm, and the rain was hammering down. It wasn't taking time. And he said he shook his roommate awake and said to him, "Come on, look at that weather. We have a chance." Sligo knew that. I know people say it's the same for both teams and all that stuff, but you and I, long time in the game, know it's not. We were a good football team. Let them get it down and play it. And when you've seen that conditions, it was going to be one of those games. Also, Artie makes a very good point. None of us, I think, realised how much support Sligo can take to a cup final.
Mm.
They were kind of like Derry City of their day, if you know what I mean, with the support that we take now. They had a huge, huge fan base. We had enough chances they won it. It was one of those days, and as the game went on, you knew, as you do in football, at Saturday life, you just knew, is not going to happen for us. But it was very interesting what Gavin Dyke said, that they recognised that, you know, obviously we were favourites. We were in a good run. They recognised that. Huge regret. Coyler and I still talk about it. A wee humorous story. He spoke about Craig McKeever. At Craig's funeral mass, Father Chris, you know, Father Chris told these wee funny things.
Very well.
He said that. He spoke about the cup final, and he says that Craig missed two chances and he would have scored. But that is true. Sitting there in the chapel, you know, I busted out laughing and saying that's true. A big, big, massive regret. You know, and by the way, this is Derry. So even to this day, there are people who remind me that I took them to a cup final, that they borrowed money to go to it, and that I lost the final. Yes, no later than last week, at above all places, the Sister Claire retreat. I was doing a wee bit of helping out at the Sister Claire retreat. Myself, Don, Nugger, in a few hours, and a certain gentleman passed by, and he was actually talking about Aaron Moore going to this Junior Cup final. And I said, oh, I'm going up to a match. And I said, oh, well, not like a match you took us to, you got us beat. So there you go, Dee. That's scary, you know what I mean?
Earlier on, you talked about Paul Diamond coming in because the talk of liquidation continued post-season and the consortium of Philip O'Doherty and Paul Diamond came forward. Did you play an active role by any chance in bringing them under the fold?
Well, Philip came to Derry, and he won't mind me saying this, Philip came to Derry through me. Philip was a young engineer in DuPont, and I worked in DuPont, and we became friendly, and we played in a Thursday night team. I'm not long friendly, Philip's mummy when I say this, right? But he was a half-decent left-back. He had a good left foot, right? We had a wee team in the Guido Bar. We played on a Thursday night. We played friendlies, and he wasn't a bad player. I have to say it up front, because if I don't, probably kill me, or he'll withdraw his foot. One of the two. But no, Philip came in mainly because of me. That's how he got involved with Derry City, myself and John Barrett. And I knew Paul through business relationships with the company that I worked with, the buyer at that time for the American company. So, but I certainly was out there looking for people to come in. I'm fairly certain I spoke to Garvin at the time as well. I think Garvin came in as well. So I just wanted somebody in, so that partly to stabilise the club, obviously, but partly so that I could go. Another story came into my head, a very famous man involved here. Roy Coyle had signed on a 2-year contract the son of the great legendary Bobby Lennox of Celtic. Bobby Lennox came here and asked to meet me, and he said, can you give me a straight answer? Is my son going to make it? Is he good enough? And I said, no. And he said, he will shake your hand today and he will walk away from that 2-year contract. That would have put us straight into liquidation at that time. Straight into 2 years. He had a big contract. You know, that's the type of thing that you don't hear in football anymore. That other principle stand of saying, if he can't do it for you, he's not taking any wages off it. He's away.
To be honest with you, Tony, ask this question tongue in cheek. You had Peter Reid over for a friendly against Crystal Palace. Artie at the time made a joke about, are you going to try and sign him because he was a free agent? Did you chance your arm?
I mean, I would have signed Peter Reid in a heartbeat, obviously, you know, but this is a great side of football. Scott McGarvey introduced me over a phone to Peter Reid. So, thank you, Peter. And he said, he's over and play for Derry. And he said, look, we'll be in the papers tomorrow. He said, I'm getting the manager. So I'm fairly sure it was at Notts County. We played Crystal Palace, a friendly game in the Brandywell. What a Palace team, right? The England manager, Gareth Southgate, those guys were all playing, right? When the Palace bus pulled in to the Brandywell, Peter Reid stepped off the bus. Over to Hans Scott, was introduced to me, and he said, look, you remember I said to you on the phone, if I could ever do you a turn, I would. Well, he said, I'm over to play for you in the friendly. He wouldn't take any money. Our directors were panicking, and what's we have to pay him? He wouldn't take any money. And his fee was for me to take him at that time to the rocking chair and buy him a half a dozen Guinness, and that was his fee. That's a fact.
Would you consider 93-94 a success under the circumstances?
Oh, under the circumstances, 100%. I mean, when I took over, we were bottom of the league by 6 points. People were looking to leave left, right, and centre, you know.
So for the final question, I think I should ask you then, with everything you've experienced as a manager, would you recommend managing Derry City to a local man?
If you were an R. Felix Healy, yes. You know, Jim McLaughlin, my God, you know, forget about it. You know, oh, Jim had maybe had the advantage of living here when he was managing, but not living here all the time. But I mean, there are people who are born to manage. Jim was one of them. Felix was another. Those people are born to manage. I never was, you know. Somebody has that ambition locally. If they're good enough, if they can go for it, absolutely. Of course, I'd recommend it. If nothing else, they have in your CV that you are manager of Derry City. My God, what an achievement, and how proud it made me, I have to say. Really proud.
Thank you very much, Tony, for your time. Greatly appreciated. Don't forget, ladies and gentlemen, Match Night Live this coming Friday night. Away to Galway United, Michael Keely will be in commentary. And then join me the Tuesday after Easter as Sligo Rovers are the visitors. My co-com will be Eddie Sadak. Until then, have a very, very good week.